Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, offering crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com.
Commodity Week was recorded the 16th day of April 2015.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the marketplace with Matt Bennett from Channel Seeds and Bennett Consulting out of Windsor, Illinois, Aaron Curtis of Midco from Bloomington, Illinois, Dave Hightower from the Hightower Report in Chicago, and Chip Nellinger of Blue Reef Agri Marketing out of Morton, Illinois. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at AgriGold.com.
Aaron, Dave, Chip, and Matt, let's begin as usual. Normally, we start with a list of items to discuss provided by each of you. We'll start with you, Matt Bennett.
You know, I've had people ask me quite a bit here in the last couple of days, how concerned. I think we talked about it today on the closing market report about the time of the year, you know, being the middle of April, if we're worried about being able to get things planted on in a timely fashion. I'm not so much worried about it on our farm. I think that it could have some implications, and I think we probably ought to kick that around a little bit. And then, you know, just simply looking at what the acreage implications are going to be due not only to weather, but due to, you know, the price levels that we have and the ratio from corn to beans.
Aaron Curtis of Midco.
Well, same question I've been asking all winter, Todd, is when's the farmer going to sell some of this old crop corn? We've been talking about how much old crop corn still needs to move. Farmers still pretty obviously very quiet as far as wanting to move stuff and kind of getting bored here with this range that we're in. But you know, when does that start to let loose? What's going to trigger that? And, you know, in our industry, of course, we want to know what that's going to mean to basis.
And Chip Nellinger of Blue Reef.
Well, I would say also the dollar. It looks like the last few days here were pretty highly correlated to the dollar because there's not much other news. Other than that, you know, I kind of take it the opposite of Matt. I mean, there's good and bad with this planting thing. There's a lot of people I'm talked to in West Illinois. I talked to a guy earlier. He's done planting corn. I mean, there's a fair amount of corn on the ground. It's only April 16th, so.
All right, and finally, David Hightower, the Hightower Report.
Well, I'd say two things. I would say that we need to reiterate how quick they can get it in. I mean, some of the last 2-3 years we've seen the record pace, and someone might correct me on this, but I think we had, half the crop planted in a week or less at one point. And another significant development I think that's on top of the market right now is not just the dollar, but the whole outside market influence, I think, is perhaps ready to shift.
Okay, so I want to begin, Matt, with you with the question, and I think I'd like to take this across the board, that I asked you at the end of the closing market report on Thursday afternoon, the last item, which was, would you be interested in making new crop corn and or soybean sales? And if I remember correctly, you said no for corn, but you were actually pretty interested, even at these prices, in making new crop soybean sales. Tell me why.
Well, I do think that there is still a potential downside risk, you know, of a decent nature on soybeans. I think that a person, if nothing else, should get floors locked in or make a sale and have some participation in the upside. Soybeans relative to corn, in my opinion, are a little bit tougher environment. I think whenever we look at the world situation from a supply side, we definitely are not going to be having a shortage of soybeans anytime soon, and most people are speculating that South Americans will plant a record amount of acres again this next year coming up here in the fall. And so, you know, in my opinion, looking at corn, it's a little bit different situation in that we obviously we don't really know what acreage is going to be just yet. I think that the initial figure in a lot of people's minds probably was going to be as big as it would be. And so we do have a lot of weather to go through, I think, from both the world and domestic situation. And, you know, we probably need to keep a little closer eye on what the weather might mean to corn production, you know, especially relative to beans.
Did I read you right when you answered that question that you wanted to be at 30% sold for new crop soybeans, even if that were a matter of making new sales all the way up to 30%?
Yeah, that's a tough question because we're, you know, most of our guys are completely hedged. I mean, 100% of their production. And so right now, if I talk to someone who has done nothing as of yet, I would definitely want to get some protection in place, you know, and hope that maybe that's the first sale or their first protected area is the lowest one that they have. And hopefully maybe it'll trend up, but I certainly don't want to have all my eggs in the basket that it's going to rally from here forward.
Dave Hightower, how would you answer this question, new crop corn and soybean sales?
Well, I would say it's I'd be extremely disheartened to someone that had done nothing and to even say, what have you been looking at if you haven't done sales? Because I don't know a year in the 34 years that I've been in the business that the numbers ever stacked up as big as they are now in beans. I mean, that's a definitive. I'd be 100% sold and in beans, and I would, if I felt like I was uncomfortable with that, I would replace it, because buying a call option in the midst of a bear market in prices means you're buying something that's a little cheaper than paying up for something that's dear. So I think I don't. What are you waiting for? The horse is almost out of the barn. The horse may be 70 or 80% out of the barn when it comes to corn. But still, if I've not made sales of corn, I'm going to step up to the plate at least to replace it with something cheaper by sell cash, buy a call.
Chip Nellinger.
Yeah, I agree with everyone so far. I think the most amount of downside risk is in the beans. I think Dave hit the nail on the head. There's just a massive supply of beans out there. I don't think our market has woken up to the fact just yet, because there still is some risk here with planting and in growing season weather. But, you know, barring some major catastrophe, beans probably have the most downside risk. And it we're slowly transitioning, waking the market up to that. And I agree, you know, one of these days we're going to wake up and we're going to be at $9 beans, and, you know, then it's too late. So I think the most downside risk is in beans. If you haven't done anything, I think you have to do something to protect it, whether that's some sales with calls attached or puts. Corn, I think, is a little bit different. I do think in the next 45, 60 days, this early planting pace, you know, as long as planters are rolling in Illinois and Iowa, it's going to be hard for the market to do much. I think the next 30 to 45 days, there's probably 20 to 30 plus cents of downside risk in corn. So anything you do at this point, we're, I guess, advising people maybe make it a temporary type thing with a put floor or some sort of strategy that you can come back out of, because there still could be plenty of volatility down the road. And a little different situation in corn than beans, I guess, in our opinion. But, yeah, I'm very concerned with beans, have been for a while. I think the downside could be kind of frightening in the bean market.
Aaron Curtis, I left you at the end of this one on purpose, because I want you to take it from two points of view. The first, in the normal way, what do you think producers should be doing if they haven't already? And then secondly, because you sat in an elevator, what have they actually done?
Well, we sure haven't bought much. You know, I mentioned earlier, we got a lot of old crop corn to buy. Farmers have been pretty diligent about getting some old crop beans sold here since harvest, but boy, there's just not much new crop corn and soybeans been bought at this point. You know, we had a slow fall purchase program a year ago, and it's even less this year. So it's been pretty quiet, and you know, it's partly due to the fact that obviously some concern about what their break evens are and whether or not they can make some money here this fall, and I think that's been somewhat hesitant. Just the shift here to lower prices has also caught producers off guard here a little bit, and so I'm hoping, of course, at this point that prices can rally moving forward. I guess I'm not extremely bearish on corn at this point. I think we're going to continue to be range bound. We've had the chance here multiple times to take the market down below the outside of this range here under this 370 area for May corn, continue to fail at that. You know, we get back to the top end of the range here on corn, you know, I'd probably be looking at offering some protection in at that point. But here today, I guess not. I'm not overly bearish on corn here moving forward, at least for the next few days. Soybeans, it's hard to disagree with what the numbers say as far as the bearishness. I guess here if we can hold around this 940, 950 area, I guess I'd be a little more confident that maybe we can get a little bounce in here. But I guess I'm still in the mindset that kind of sell the bounce mentality here moving forward, just with the sure basis or sure numbers here that we have moving forward, especially if we continue to talk about planting all these beans that we're going to talk about. But no, we haven't bought much, and I guess I don't think that's going to change probably in the short term unless the market bounces to some levels the producers are a little more comfortable with. And this rain sure is not enticing that at all, Todd.
And Mr. Hightower, from your vantage point there in Chicago, you suggest that we ought to talk about outside market influences. Are those fundamental things like what's happening in Greece or in Ukraine, in the Middle East, or are they technical sorts of outside influences, black box purchases and those sorts of things, or both?
Well, I think primarily fundamental. Early in this production cycle, January, February, we had a lot of extremely negative energy prices falling, dollar exploding, and the grain markets kind of got out from under, they avoided going down underneath that. We've since kind of had a crescendo of that, and so we may continue to see disappointment on how slow the economy's recovering. China's still kind of backpedaling. Russia is still under the sanctions. But we have, as of the middle of April now, we've got a turn. We've got a potential developing turn in the dollar. Now, keep in mind, the dollar has made our exports uncompetitive. It's cast a negative pall over all physical commodity markets. Even the deflationary oil influence has been there. But now that's all starting to turn. In fact, the crude oil market's made $10, $11 rally. We're starting to begin to waddle down global energy supply. So we may not see this hammer, particularly in the corn market, may not see this outside market hammer continuing maybe into the summer. It could actually turn around and be a positive. So I don't know. I see the greatest amount of risk in the short term in the grains, and then perhaps maybe June, July, we begin to get benefits from the outside market.
When you say the dollar has made us uncompetitive, I'm going to guess you mean for corn, but certainly not for soybeans. We're at a record pace of, what, $1.77 billion or something like that, more than half of our crop in total.
Right. Well, I mean non-competitive, but I also mean there's just a lack of buying interest for commodities in general by speculators and by funds and by other entities. So, yeah, it's hurt us specifically in wheat and soybeans. It's been a kind of a cast of a negative shadow over all commodities.
Oh, do you think we'd have a greater soybean export number if the dollar had remained lower?
No, I don't. I'm just saying that if we see when you look at how much higher dollar sell commodity mentality, how long that's been in place, if you were to begin to unwind that and send it in the opposite direction, then we'll have a much different environment that the grains are facing.
No, so it's not necessarily about the total number of bushels of exports. It's about the perception of the trade.
Right, and it just comes down to it. A lot of things can help corn. Not much things can help soybeans. There's only so much help that can be lent, I guess.
When you're pushing up towards 400 million bushels in carryout, that's just a big number.
Exactly.
Let's turn our attention, Chip, back to you and stay with the dollar, because you mentioned it as well. It's been losing some value. Do you think that will continue, and will it have much of an impact? We discussed that just a bit with Mr. Hightower. Do you have a different take on it?
Yeah, well, I think in the short run here, it just seems like this week and even last week, there's a lack of news out here in the grain market. And so we're kind of in a watch and wait mode. So therefore, the market then watches these outside markets closer. And you can see we've had some pretty wide range days in the dollar and the currency markets. And the grain markets just kind of follow to a mirror image. So the recent drop in the dollar has definitely been supportive to corn and beans. I think if it weren't for the drop in the dollar, we'd be talking about, you know, instead of $4 corn, we'd be talking about $3.85, $3.90 December futures. So I think it has given us a floor. Whether that continues or not, I don't know. The dollar's kind of building a big triangle formation. You know, kind of remains to be seen whether we're going to break out to the downside and correct deeper, which could help us in the short run. But, you know, I think there's another story to that as well. So it's not just an export standpoint. People you talk to from the Southern Hemisphere, you know, it's been a great boon for them. They are selling beans down there at a tremendous price. You know, and it really is going to spur a lot of extra, shouldn't say extra acres, it's not going to curtail their acreage any. So, you know, that's an effect of the strong dollar as well. You know, the South American producer, it's kind of a windfall, and you know, I don't think you're going to see any cut in acreage. If anything, you could see some increased planted acreage down there, and most of that would go to beans. So, yeah, I do think the dollar is a big influence here, and it can go both ways because we're kind of in a sideways trading range in the dollar here, waiting on more information.
If I could interject there, you know, the reason I feel that there's a turn in the dollar is very substantial because think of some of the things we've seen the last 3 weeks. Yesterday, discussions were that perhaps the Eurozone will stop quantitative easing sooner than anticipated. So here it's a 180-degree shift from Greece is going out of the Eurozone, the Euro is going to fail, everything that's going to be almost impossible to recover in the Eurozone. Number two, first quarter European auto sales were up 10% over last year. Another item is that profits by large U.S. banks now are starting to springboard. So there is recovery that's starting to take place outside of the U.S., and the lack of a recovery anywhere but here is what put the dollar in this commanding position. So if anything, the dollar now comes away with a much less commanding edge. And there could be even an argument to say that, look, if we get a little bit of growth in Europe, this could be the bell ringing for the dollar.
I want to take you all in just a slightly different direction and talk about new crop corn price on average. USDA next month will release its first set of numbers looking at all of the supply and demand table for new crop corn. Daryl Good here on campus has said he is still of a mind that we could have that cash price, national average cash price, 50 cents higher than this year. This year it's at $3.70 for the average. Can we make $4.20 under, and Daryl always works under normal growing conditions. Can it be that way? Does anybody have an opinion on next year's cash price for corn nationally?
You know, I think what I keep encouraging people to think about is last year's weather pattern couldn't have been a whole lot better for most people, not everyone. And so to expect, you know, a 170-ish yield would probably be a little bit far-fetched. But then whenever you look at, you know, for instance, 2 years ago, 158 was considered pretty decent size, albeit on a lot more acres. Somewhere in between there, you know, maybe we end up planting, you know, what the USDA said. Maybe we go 88. I don't know. But the balance sheet tightens considerably. And so, you know, whenever you're looking at that balance sheet, it heightens, in my opinion, sensitivity to any weather issues. And so you could get some excitement in the marketplace. Now, from our vantage point right now, to get a 420 cash price, it seems like we're going to need a fair amount of bullish influences. And I don't know, but I really don't want to argue with Daryl Good. So maybe I'll say we're going to, and I hope on my own farm I have, you know, some rally potential. But we, you know, again, we're pretty heavily sold on corn as well. So.
And I should say that that number is from a month ago, but I don't think Daryl would change his mind too much. And I do have him on record with that. Let's do talk a little bit about the acreage changes, if there are any, Matt, that you think that have taken place based on rainfall in the Delta region to this point.
Well, you know, going into this year, based upon some of the guys we've talked to in the Delta, I mean, you know, they were backing off of corn just a little bit to begin with, and I think some of them were kind of wondering one way or the other whether they were going to be planting. And so if you're a weak-kneed at all, you know, this weather certainly has chased a few more acres. Now, given how many acres they plant as a grand total of what we plant in the U.S., it's probably not going to be a huge shift, but You know, I would say that area is a concern to me. And then, you know, obviously some places in the upper Midwest, guys were still trying to make decisions 3 and 4 weeks ago whenever I was up there. You know, profitability didn't look too hot for them, and some of them didn't have such a great year last year, and drying costs entered into the mix. And but then they have a really good spring weather pattern this year, so it's kind of a you don't really know where that's going to fall out. But I certainly don't think that we're going to come in above 89.2, even with good weather this spring. For some people, I think that it's probably a stretch, especially whenever we're looking at the economics.
And you have been on record saying you can plant if you've got the right weather. You can plant your crop in 5 days, your corn crop, that is?
Right. That's what I was alluding to earlier. So I would pretty much concur with what Dave said earlier. I mean, I have been asked over and over, you know, if I'm concerned about the lack of planting progress. But personally speaking, not only did we plant late in the year and get all of it done in 5 days, but we had a phenomenal yield in 2013. So while I think that the biggest question here, if we would stay wet in the eastern Corn Belt, is what the acreage mix might switch, what that switch might be. I do think that on our farm, and most guys I know, they can get the crop planted fairly quickly. And with the genetics we have, if we have any decent weather at all, we can plant into May and not feel too bad about our prospects.
And somebody can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think I'm with Dave that we did plant about 50%. It seems like even maybe slightly more than that in 1 week in recent years. So we can really put a crop in very, very quick. And I think that probably plays into, Dave, whether you get very concerned about the timing and lateness and how late we can actually get into the season and not worry too much about a corn crop.
Exactly. I mean, they're really good at what they do. And I don't know, I think that Darrell Good has a chance of being right for 20 cash. And, you know, we need to plant north of 90 million in order to begin to tilt those numbers even in the direction of oversupply, in my view, on corn. And I want to throw something out for longer term thinkers here. Keep in mind, we got the 2.5 million to 3 million barrels more crude oil from the Bakken oil reserve. But what the world doesn't have is more gasoline and diesel. And when you're selling 84 million new vehicles a year annually globally, you see China with this extreme problem with pollution. You know, a real quick solution like they did in the Olympics is put ethanol in and around Beijing. And so I would maintain that if we do get a downward track in corn prices and you see this ongoing recovery in crude oil pricing, that we'll make a low in the corn market rather significantly. And keep in mind, I think a large oil tanker, 2 million barrels of crude, so you can put 84 million gallons of gas in one of those things. And so it wouldn't take much in the way of a shipment of ethanol and a export of ethanol to completely change the fundamentals in corn, say in a 4 or 5 week period, sometime June, July, or August of this year.
You know, you think that could actually happen, that quickly?
I absolutely think so, because we haven't seen any new refineries open in Australia, so it's not, we have the same refinery type of problem here as is present throughout the rest of the world. No one wanted to build refineries, but yet we're adding all these new vehicles. And to me, I'm surprised that the market loses track of that, because it's a lot of vehicles that are being sold for what's supposedly a very slack global environment.
Okay, let me put these numbers back in place just a little bit for myself. So right now, RRFS says no more than 15 billion gallons of ethanol in the gasoline supply total. But we run at about 13.4, which is 10% of our total usage. So we use 134 billion or something like that in a given year. 84 million, where are those cars mostly going to? Which countries?
But again, I'm saying it's beyond our shores. And
no, that's what I'm trying to figure out. So I'm trying to figure out which countries is it? China?
Well, I mean,
that's,
it's absolutely up? India and China, and they coincidentally have the worst pollution by far. And so that's and again, forget the blending wall, because I'm talking about the export of gasoline. And keep in mind, we have 21 million barrels total in ethanol stocks in the U.S. Okay, so You know, you can look and say, well, maybe if we only have 1.4 billion extra gas pedal in the U.S. ethanol industry from where we're at right now. But my point is that when you look at the relative size of the energy market, the gasoline market at 9 billion gallons a day, it's a much bigger market, and they could swoop in here and just you know, a handful of tankers would make a difference in terms of taking 10% ethanol, pure ethanol, out of here to mix with the greater barrelage outside the country.
How much of a difference do you suppose that would make in the marketplace? How fast? What would it change?
Well, I mean, I think it's a more of a perception, because we sit here and we've seen the ethanol margins fluctuate in negative territory, minimal profits. And, you know, the reason ethanol wasn't embraced to begin with is because we didn't have enough buffer stock. I mean, who would interject ethanol into the gas supply chain if going into the 4th of July holiday, you couldn't call up and say, hey, I need this, because they didn't have it. So if you were to come in and take, whether it's regular unleaded gas or ethanol, and just take a big chunk of what we have. And, you know, the Chinese are that's their forte, is good capitalists. They want to buy when everything's really cheap. And, you know, when corn gets really weak, sometimes the ethanol price outdistances the regular unleaded price on the downside. And that'd be just the time that someone would come in and make a bid for a big pot of our gasoline.
Anybody want to take the opposite side of this one along the way? And not necessarily on ethanol and exports, but just on the price of corn and the possibilities over the next year or so?
I just think that there's a limited downside. I you know, there's some people out here thinking, you know, you're going to go to 265, 270 corn and stay there. I don't see that. The demand base is too big, and there's always those questions like Dave brought up. So going lower is only going to help stimulate that demand. So I'm not saying there's no downside. You, with a big crop, you know, there may be a period of time where we, you know, hit $3 December futures, maybe break under it for a few days. But I think it's going to be temporary and short term. The problem is, if you go that deep and we don't get a chance, there's some big problems out here financially for producers. So it's a matter of how long can we wait out the rebound. I think it will come because the demand's big, but unfortunately it doesn't mean we can't go lower in the short run. I don't know if that makes sense, but I'm friendly demand long term on corn.
Aaron Curtis, you've been listening silently. What do you think?
Well, I tend to agree with Daryl. I think that you know, we could easily see some better prices for this fall. I mean, you quickly do the math on carry out moving into next year. I think Matt was right there. We're going to see yields back off a little bit. I don't think we do 170 again, and you get down in that 15, 16 area. And we've had a tendency for the May numbers to see a little bit of a decrease here as we move through the year. We started the last couple of years at a little over 2 billion bushel carry out, and we've gone down from there. So, you know, you get in that 1.5, 1.6, and then you're getting closer to just a 1 month's usage here, and I think that increases the volatility a little bit, makes the market a little bit less likely to have to move much lower. So, you know, I tend to agree with that. I think there's still some upside coming on D's corn, whether or not it's outside market related or weather related, we will see. But I just think just crunching the numbers here moving forward on carryout, I think the market's going to be somewhat reluctant to really move a lot lower here going forward.
So really it is now a matter that corn and soybeans are in different boats, I assume. One where we're satisfactory, how about that, in our carryout, relatively speaking, potential carryout for the new crop. But because we have a six-month changeover from North America to South America on soybeans, that supply is pretty constant, and that we now have a pretty good size carryout, I think, and somebody correct me, maybe David, you know this, in both North and South America, so that the United States has a fairly large carryout, and I think the South Americans are looking at a pretty good size carryout too.
And also they are not sold either, so. And that is that has yet to come onto the market in the short term, some of the Argentine supply. you know, I want to take a different course here real quick. We have time to, you know, if we, when we look at China and the corn market, we really see a story this week that suggests the Chinese may have to subsidize the corn growers there. Why? Well, because they can't, the prices aren't favorable for profitability, but yet we have what we think is a large buffer stock supply in Beijing, and that we haven't worked off. And so the market's been using that as a negative. But my question is, if you have such a large buffer stock of strategic corn inside China, how come the retail price in China has remained so high? And that tells me that, in fact, they don't have as much corn as they need in China, and they've used every excuse under the sun to try and get it cheaper. And just as the ethanol guys might step in, we got to watch the Chinese, because their aversion to U.S. corn could change. I'm not too sure we'd see $3 D's corn before the Chinese would be all over that.
That'd be interesting. Although I suppose the Chinese could just hold the corn off the market. They're good capitalists, but they're also good communists. and so they do a lot of planning. I don't know. What you say makes some sense. Actually, quite a bit of sense. But they could just hold it off the market, couldn't they?
They could, but I mean, the whole idea that they're done with strategic commodity buying, I think, is just a false thing they've thrown out there. And you know, maybe they had a bad experience of buying 2 years worth of cotton, but boy, I could see a lot more rationale to buy 2 years of corn than I could ever see rationale for buying 2 years of cotton. And so that's something that's hard for me to forget, because it's a critical, soybeans and corn are very critical to their long-term plans.
Okay, now I want to come back to old crop corn, because I think using the word critical, how critical do each of you believe it is for producers to market old crop corn that they have unpriced, whether it's in the bin or the elevator? And let me start with Aaron Curtis.
Well, I think we got to continue to watch this range-bound trade. I think we've had some instances here, you know, three or four times over the last couple months where May corn has gotten up to that 390, 395. We've started to see a little increase in farmer selling, and then market quickly backs down, and then the farmer goes quiet again. So I think we will see some interest once we get back up there again. I know they all want $4 corn, pretty content to wait right now, and money needs, of course, are not a big concern, at least it seems like for majority of the producers here moving forward. So I think if we get back to the top end of this range, 390, 395, I'd be sticking my toe back in the water. Here, down here at 370, 375 on nearby futures, I guess I'm not too interested in doing a whole lot right now.
Chip Nallinger?
Well, I think it comes down to timing. So, you know, if a producer needs cash flow in the short run here, meaning the next 60 days, we're getting pretty critical, like you said. If you can take a longer-term approach and wait out into August, September, then there's probably no need to panic right now. But, you know, I think it all comes down to a case-by-case situation. If it's a cash flow issue, that's a problem, because we probably don't have much of an opportunity the next 30 days.
Matt Bennett.
Well, I think when you're looking at cash, you know, you look at what the basis has done, and, you know, the guy in the sitting with corn sitting in the bin has basically picked up 45 to 50 cents just on basis since the middle of harvest. And so obviously he's picked up a fair amount on basis there. I can't imagine why we would want to hold on to it a whole lot longer at this point. I think we all agree that there's some potential rally opportunities for corn. And so, you know, I would be more more inclined to get the cash in hand and then, you know, re-own corn, something basis to new crop, because obviously the old crop is a quantified thing. We know what it is. It was definitely ample. But the new crop, we just don't know yet. And so I would be more inclined to do that. I think that what we have to understand is that if we get a 20, 30-cent rally sometime here shortly, you're going to lose a decent chunk of that back on the basis, because there's a wall of supply that's going to be coming. And yes, the basis has been trying to encourage this corn out of the farmer's hands, but it hasn't really gotten it done. When it starts to encourage that corn to get out of the farmer's hands, do not expect basis to do anything but weaken in that short run. And so, yeah, I'm probably more inclined to be moving my corn, looking on further down the line, maybe participating if I want to keep the upside open.
And Dave Hightower.
I concur with Matt 100% on the basis moves. So why are you holding it? Sell the cash and then replace it with a short-dated new crop at-the-money corn call. You sell it. That gives you the money to buy yourself a longer-dated DEES. And so what you're doing, two things here, is you're getting out of the way of what could be an adverse basis move. You're getting out of the way of what could be a realization that the bean crop's going to be okay. The corn got at least what it needed to get started for the year. You get out from underneath that price risk. But you're also going to make the market pay for part of your long entry back into the corn market later in the year. So I sell the cash. Sell an at-the-money, short-dated, new crop corn call option, and then turn around and buy myself a longer-dated DEES call, and then I got my cake and eat it too. I got out of the cash, and I have my foot in the water, and I'm going to make the market maybe pay for some of my re-entry into the market.
Well, on that happy note, I think we should wrap up. Does everybody have a final thought that they'd like to share? Maybe we can start with you, Chip Nallinger.
Well, I just reiterate, everyone on here probably had the same thought process. Most downside risk potential going forward is likely in the beans. And, it's not too late to do something to protect yourself in the beans. There's plenty of ways to do that. Corn, I think that in the short run there's downside, but I think there's also a high probability by the time you get to late summer, at the earliest and maybe post-harvest into next winter, that we're at least back to this level, if not significantly higher. So it becomes a timing issue there on the corn side.
Aaron Curtis?
Yeah, just don't let the market's quiet range blow you to sleep here. I think if we do get some of these bounces, you have to be a little more proactive here. They've given you some chances in the past up towards the top end of the range. I think we got to take advantage of it this next time if we do get up there. But just don't try to fall asleep. I know everybody's trying to get in the field and get some corn planting done, but make sure you continue to pay attention to what these markets are doing if we do get that bounce.
Matt Bennett.
Yeah, I pretty much agree with what these guys are saying. I don't want to get too aggressive on the corn sales under this spring insurance price. I want to kind of be a little more patient here. And as far as soybeans go, I think that a person needs to be protected at the absolute least. People need to understand what the possibilities are there because they are, I guess, as you call it, two different boats right now. It's a couple of different situations, and we need to understand what the implications of both of those are, and then just, encourage everybody to have a safe spring.
And finally, Dave Hightower.
Hedge beans with short beans and hedge corn with short beans.
Dave Hightower is with the Hightower Report out of Chicago, Illinois. Our other panelists included Matt Bennett of Channel Seeds and Bennett Consulting from Windsor, Illinois, Chip Nellinger of Blue Reef Agri-Marketing out of Morton, Illinois, and Aaron Curtis from Midco in Bloomington, Illinois. That wraps up this 16th day of April edition 2015 of Commodity Week. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at agrigold.com.